Hello, Tippendales, and happy April. We are sitting down with the April guest tipper of the month, Liz Hake, to chat about herself, her career, her life, and whatever else moves us when the spirit hits. But Liz, welcome to Daily Tips That May or May Not Help You. Please, would you tell the Tippendales kind of who you are, your background a little bit, and I don't know, whatever again feels right.
Absolutely. Hi. Nice to be here. Well, first things first, I will start off by saying I am a typical multi-hyphenate. So that means I do quite a number of things all at one time. I am a speaker. I am a communication coach. I'm a real estate broker in the Seattle area. I do speaking engagements around the country. I coach not only professional and corporate clients, but I also do real estate agents as well. And then, of course, I have my regular real estate roster there in Seattle. And then I do a little bit of fitness for fun on the side, just because I like putting on the mic and feeling like a star.
Where do you do fitness?
I teach at a studio in Seattle. I teach bar, and I have a dedicated roster of clients who are there every Wednesday and Saturday. And, you know, I just, again, the Britney mic is a vibe. I couldn't stop.
Well, then, to that roster, welcome to Daily Tips That May or May Not Help You for all the Wednesdays. Tippendales, Liz and I met, we were actually college roommates, and we started our lives as actors at the same time. Liz, I'm going to give you a fun one that's real fast, but I was once interviewing for a normal person job, and a guy was asking me about the things I do, and I was listing things off, and he said, oh, you're a factotum. And I was like, what? And it's a noun that just means multi-hyphenate, but sounds way bougier.
I'm going to write that down. So, that's nice.
Factotum.
That's very nice.
Yeah, that's kind of, well, let's jump in. I mean, I know that after you and I graduated college together, you went into the performing arts. Mm-hmm. Give me sort of like an overview of like that life and how you found yourself yearning to switch.
Yeah. Well, I should start off by saying I have always been kind of equally left brain, right brain. And even in college, knowing what I was studying, I always had this thought in my head, like, okay, but at what point, like what happens as I age or what happens if I, you know, no longer can dance or whatever. And that future trip was always in the back of my brain. I booked a bunch of professional gigs right out of college and kind of worked professionally for years until I had an opportunity to take another national tour or to take a gig on a cruise line. And at that point, I think it was still a little bit, I don't know, people had opinions about what cruise ship work looked like. And I looked at it and went, well, I can make great money and I won't have to worry about rent or room and board, and I will travel the whole world. I think I'll do that. And so I walked onto that cruise ship and thought to myself, single, ready to mingle. I'm about to take over the world. Let's see what happens. And day two, I met my husband, my now husband. And I'll come back to New York in between, do a few months here and there, or backpacking around the world. And by about year four, again, I was on this ship and I kept thinking, gosh, at the end of every contract, I've worked with people from all over the industry, Broadway stars, no names, new musicals, new works, book musicals, whatever. But every time the gig comes to a close, I have a mini panic attack going, I have to start from zero again. And that the amount of anxiety that I had about feeling like I couldn't build something, it started making me think, what else can I do? What other skills can I start using? How can I start changing or pivoting to build something that I can create a life that I'm excited by, not just a career that I'm excited by? So since my husband is from another country, we had to work through the visa process. And that means that our travel was kind of put on a halt. We moved to South Africa for about a year. And when we finally got his visa stuff figured out, we decided, do we want to move back to New York or do we want to move to Seattle and be closer to my family? And the thinking behind it was, well, I don't want to move to New York and try and support us by myself since he wouldn't be able to work. And so we moved closer to my family where I knew we would have support. And from that point, we started just figuring out, okay, how can we use these skills? I like people. I'm good with people. I've company managed before. I can figure this out somehow. And I started working with nonprofits. I started teaching public speaking to a bunch of the tech companies in Seattle. I got my real estate license because my mother actually had told me that I would be incredible at it. And I thought to myself, there is no way that I would ever be a real estate agent. That just did not appeal to me. But when COVID happened, my husband lost his job. And I said, all right, well, the only option for us right now is for me to start building this real estate thing, since real estate agents could still work. We could still be out in the wild. And I grew my business from nothing to one of the top producers in Seattle in about a year. So it kind of happened by chance, if I'm perfectly honest. I didn't really feel like I had another option. I was back up against the wall. And because of that, I was able to build a skill that I don't quite know if I had. And then the last few years, I've been able to add all of that coaching and that speaking back into it to talk with people about the business that I've built, the brand that I've created, and kind of the business principles behind more conscious selling techniques than the ones that you're traditionally taught in real estate sales.
Oh, I mean, I have all sorts of notes written down now to follow up on, but we're going to come back to conscientious techniques, because that's tasty. But we're gonna go back. So kind of along the path that you just laid out for me, at every opportunity you said, like, there's a path that people I knew normally followed. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, what if I went a different direction? Mm-hmm. And you just listed like six separate instances of choosing the path less traveled. Mm-hmm. Right, to take a Robert Frost, is it road less traveled, path?
I'll take either. I like them both.
Yeah, you all know what I'm saying. So the question I have for you is, as someone who is admittedly equally left brain right brain, mm-hmm. who had anxiety over starting from zero and what happens when it ends and all that, how do you square the round hole of, rather than following the tried and true path, each time you said, well, what if I went left here?
That's such a great question. I think I've always been interested in when something didn't feel quite like it fit. I just made little auto corrections all the time. And it wasn't all at once. I would say sometimes the shift was necessary. Moving to another country was kind of a, either we're together or we're not together. And well, I loved the guy, so we're going to be together. And when COVID happened, it was either we have no income or you swim. And so there were a couple of instances where I didn't feel I had a choice in the moment. But when it comes to kind of deciding to do the thing that isn't what everyone else is doing, I wish that I had a better answer, other than I would look at things and go, I don't like that. Like, I don't like that. And I have always had an issue with someone says you should do something, and it makes me just want to say, I want to do the other thing, then I don't want to do that. There's something about being shitted on constantly, which we all are, that grinds my gears in a way I simply don't know how to express. So yeah, I would look at something and say, it feels mostly good, but something doesn't feel quite right. How can I adjust a little bit to make it feel a little more comfortable? How can I stretch this shirt out to make it feel a little more comfortable? How can I add some blister pads to these shoes to make them more walkable or more long-term? And I really do believe in constant auto corrections. And sometimes, you know, like the airplane analogy, they make little adjustments the whole time, right? Sometimes I think it leads you back to the place you started, but you have to learn the lesson by doing the other thing first before you can come back and see it through a new lens.
That's a very self-conscious way to think about the world. Mm-hmm. I think for a lot of us, myself included, like, being that aware of self is very scary. Do you have kind of a tip or trick you found to, like, recognize that brain impulse of, like, something's not quite right here and I need to put a finger on it?
Gosh. I don't know if I, honestly, I wish that I was a little less aware sometimes. It is the plight of an overthinker. I think that us, the folks who are wild overthinkers, I tend to procrastinate. I tend to ruminate on situations that are going to happen or have happened and constantly think through them over and over. What could I have done differently? How could that have gone? What could I have said? Whatever. And I think because of that constant worry, it's allowed me to be very, very self-aware of, okay, if I do this thing, then this is going to happen. Then this is going to happen. I see the chain reaction before we get there. So every time I notice that tiny thing, and I play out what this could look like, I go, well, I don't like the end goal. So that means I need to change something here.
I love that. Look at the end result and follow the chain reactions is a great way to think about that.
Well,
okay.
And also tell the folks, though, don't take it too far, because that's how you get stuck in the rumination cycle. So sure. Take it with a grain of salt, you know?
Sure. Analysis paralysis is real.
Yes.
Okay. So then you are now married to your husband, mm-hmm. and you're figuring out visa stuff. So you're mm-hmm. moving to South Africa. A tip that I don't know that I ever thought I would get to ask on this show, because it's truly not an expertise I will ever have. But as the partner to someone going through the visa process, what tips do you have for people who might be in that boat?
Oh, good. Well, something you will learn whether you want to or not is you'll become highly aware of the privilege that we have as people who have an American passport. I do think watching it from the side that I watched it on, being affected by it, but not necessarily being judged for it, gave me a whole new, not only appreciation, but wild compassion for the folks who are working in a U.S. company, but do not have the rights of a U.S. citizen. And that was eye-opening, disheartening, exciting, disappointing in all the different ways. So what I would say for the folks who are planning on doing that is know ahead of time, especially if it's for a marriage visa, it's going to feel far less magical than all of your friends who are getting engaged, who are going through the marriage process and it seems super easy and really fun, because they will not have to document their relationship from zero to now. There's no proving, there's no money involved, there's no anything. And I think that we became very aware of every single aspect of our relationship. We had to talk about everything from the jump, the finances, the, you know, what we wanted to do long term, how we were going to make this financially possible, because that is one of the things that stop people from marrying the people that they love, is because it's a very expensive process. So I think the tip would just be to take it a day at a time, continue checking in with the partner who is going through the visa work, because they will often feel like they're being examined. But you, as the person who is sponsoring the visa, will sometimes feel, I don't want to say used is the wrong word. It can feel impersonal. You, as the person who is sponsoring the visa, it can feel really impersonal. And so having a lot of check-ins with your partner to be like, mine were, I just want to make sure if I wasn't an American, you'd still want to marry me, right? There are all these like very insecure check-ins that would come up, right? And then the same thing with my husband. I just want to make sure that you're not feeling resentful and tired, and like, I want you to know that I love you, and this, I would want to be with you whether we lived in the States or not, right? So getting really honest with your partner up front, talking about all that hard, scary stuff, and taking it one day at a time.
Oof.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you're on the other side of it. That sounds like so much.
Yep.
So now we're in Seattle.
Yeah.
And you say, all right, I'm going to build a business from scratch, teaching, coaching, public speaking, mm-hmm. and all these other, how? What is, as we talk about tips and tricks, how did you make the very first inroad to be able to create that as a career?
Yes. Well, I can't take full credit because I was contracted by a company who was already doing some of that work. I looked at it and said, listen, number one, networking is your friend, but I don't believe in networking in the sense that I think there's a book, of course, it's no offense, written by a man. And it's something about how like, sorry, every relationship is like everyone has something for you, right? You don't know where your next deal is coming from vibe, which I think is so, I just think it's icky. And so I had already been showing up in my place of work as a fitness instructor. I was teaching multiple classes a week working at Flywheel, RIP. And a teacher that I was working with said, you know, I know someone who's looking for people who have performance backgrounds because they're doing some work with some of the tech companies because Seattle is a hub for all tech to help people become better speakers, less nervous for speaking on stage. And you get it. All these tech bros thought they would be behind the computer all day. And now they're having to present at 5,000 person conferences. So I was thrust into the offices of Tableau, of Google, of Microsoft, kind of going in there with just my training and said, all right, how can I translate my performance training to something that feels a little bit more binary for the average consumer? And I worked with those companies for only about 6 months or so. Until COVID happened. And so again, the constant thinking is what skills do I already have that could be marketable? What skills do I already have that I could grow? What is already a seed or a sprout that I could enhance to create more financial security for myself? And public speaking kind of, I wouldn't say it fell into my lap because I do believe that luck is opportunity meets preparation. And so I think that it was there as an opportunity. And I said, okay, I'm good at this. I know I'm good at this. I know I'm good at creating a safe space. I know I'm good at giving feedback that isn't going to be defensive or isn't going to feel like it's an attack. And how can I continue riffing on this?
Are you a gut learner? Like as you're going, you're making adjustments as you realize something that you would change? Or do you document these things? Like, do you write it all down afterwards and then like review? Like, what's your system for that growth and adjustment?
Unfortunately, Ned, I think I come across as the person who writes it all down, but I'm not. No, I think people are like, oh, Liz is so type A. And I'm like, boop, you should see my desk. Like it's,
beep, boop, bop, bop.
Yeah, woo. No, this is where I think the creative side is like, la, la, la. We're just like making decisions. Trust your gut. Like action is reaction, right? Like that's what I'm doing in this. And then sometimes I am a external processor. So I feel very lucky to have a lot of friends and a husband who will sit and kind of let me digest it out loud because I'm now going to, as I said, replay what just happened so that I'm learning as I'm processing what I said, what was said, and what worked and what didn't work. But it does also mean that 3 years down the line, people are going, how did you build this? And I said, I don't know. I just put one foot in front of the other and now I'm here. You know, that's sort of how it feels sometimes.
Totally. And then, as we all say, what up, COVID?
Ew.
Really, really sucked for the entire world. And during that time, many people, yourself included, found yourself in a bit of a pickle.
Right.
So you decided, I'm going to jump into this real estate thing. You got your license through your mom. Shout out, Karen Hay.
LOL. No, so just like you get your license through any like a regular licensing, there are real estate licensing brokerages all around the world. Every state has their own licensing procedure. I had gotten mine the summer before, the fall before, and had not done anything with it. I had joined a brokerage. You have to hang your license, same as like a lawyer would hang their license at an office. You have to hang your license. So it was hung. I was technically active, but you know, I was doing other stuff. I was teaching fitness. I was in and out of contracts for speaking. And yeah, it was one of those things where when COVID popped in, speaking went out the window, live in-person coaching and teaching went out the window. And the only people who could be out there were the emergency services and the real estate brokers with their gloves and masks and opening houses and touring people one by one. So yeah, it was I got it knowing that I wanted a career. I wanted to have options for a career that would, again, I'm constantly thinking autonomy. I'm thinking financial security. I'm thinking ability to build. And I'm thinking ease of traveling to South Africa for a month or so whenever we want to. because that's where my husband's family is from. So my constant thinking was I need to have a life where I'm not chained to a desk.
And you begin this process. And as you said, in about a year, you became one of the top producers within Seattle. Mm-hmm. That's not the kind, no offense to whatever your answer might be, but that's not the kind of thing that happens out of nowhere. There's choices that happen along the way, mm-hmm. right? There's strategies and intent. How did you come across, find, and execute your intent? And what was it to achieve that?
Number one, I was really uncomfortable with the idea of being a salesperson. That never appealed to me. And so I kept thinking, all right, again, it doesn't really feel like it aligns. How can I adjust this to make it feel more like mine? And so I started sharing really openly about what my process felt like online. I started getting on Instagram. I started sharing what I was working on. I was doing house tours. And again, this was kind of still at the beginning of what I would say the real estate social media still was. And I do not have a crazy massive following, but I do have a really engaged community now because the content I was putting out was honest. It was real. It was sharing what I was going through, and I was not selling. I was showing people what it might feel like to be in the process with me. And I've always looked at social media as instead of buy for me, buy for me, buy for me, I'm just going, I'm going on this journey. Would you like to come with me? Take my hand. And that's just how it's always been. And because of that, people started reaching out. I didn't really have a circle, but people were finding me from my fitness career, from other walks of life and referring their friends. And I just kept saying, I need this to feel comfortable and not sleazy for me. And if I can honestly achieve some type of success in this where people don't think that I used them or that I sold them or that I took advantage of a vulnerable situation, then I will have succeeded. And by showing up that way, it really has turned into that, like over the top generosity, over the top communication, honesty. I tell folks, I will talk you out of buying a house before I will talk you into buying a house, because I really think that if what you put out there comes back to you tenfold. And that's the way that I led. And when I would sit down with my brokers and they with the entire real estate industry, and they say, call all of your friends and say, I'm in real estate now. Do you want to buy a house? Or start posting X, Y, and Z, or doing all of these things that sell. I just said, it doesn't feel nice. Like, I would hate that. I would hate that phone call. So I can't call people that way. I have to find a different way. And that's, I don't know. And again, that's now we're 5 years later and I'm here. So it happens over time. You don't really realize that the snowball is rolling. You just kind of have to keep going day by day and keep doing the stuff that feels right in your gut. And at some point you realize that you are the snowball and it's moving fast, you know?
I do. All right. Now I have a bit of an esoteric follow-up.
Okay.
We have talked from the beginning about micro adjustments, mm-hmm. checking in with yourself, figuring out what doesn't feel good, finding the next micro adjustment to maybe find how it adjusts to feeling good. You don't need to make major changes when something doesn't feel good. It might just be a small thing that you need to change or fix or change your mindset and keep it the same, whatever. What's your current, I need an adjustment?
So the micro adjustment right now is doing less of the aspects that I don't like about my current career and doing more of the things in my other careers that I enjoy. Many of my real estate clients see this and know this. I am purposefully taking less clients and taking only referrals at this point in my career. People who come to me by way of people who I already know and enjoyed working with. And I'm trying to redirect some of that energy to put into more of my speaking and coaching and workshopping with corporate and larger scale clients.
Are you building any kind of like your own real estate office team? Like, are you putting people down ladder from you that follow your methodology? Is that on your roadmap?
No, it is not. And the reason is because I want autonomy. And the more people I have under me, the more I have to be available, the more I have to be ready. And there is something I will say, a lot of real estate ladders will say, start a team, build a team. I think that that is often really directed at women, because women are great nurturers and we are also really great leaders. We are transformational communicators. And I look at that and I go, well, when you do the money or when you do the finances, you look at what it takes to start a team. You're now responsible for multiple other people's paychecks and whatever. You're also now responsible for getting more leads. And whether if that's your sphere, you're now giving that sphere to other people to make their money and you're taking a smaller cut. So ultimately, to me, I go, it's going to be more time, it's going to be less money, and I'm going to have no autonomy, and I don't want to do that.
Have you ever considered outside of real estate, with the things you do, the coaching, the fitness, like putting together that kind of a team, or has it always been like a no, I want to be an IC independent contributor?
That's a good question. I can see it being something that I do later down the road with my speaking and coaching, but it would be something that I would want to wait until I know that I can pay someone a good enough wage or a good enough fee that I do not have to manage them. It's something that will come up in a future tip, but I really believe in being able to pay people well for their expertise, because if you can do that, you don't have to manage them. I need them to be able to manage themselves. And I am not quite at the point where, number one, I'm comfortable with delegating. We're working on it. And number two, I want to be at a place where I feel really comfortable paying what I know I would want to pay to have someone who can manage that aspect of the team / my career. And it doesn't all fall on me.
Okay. I have one last tip question for you, Liz Hake. More than almost anyone I know, you have taken more turns and twists and dips in a wider range of knowledge points and industries and taking a little bit from here and applying it over here to be so wildly far apart until you think about it and follow the path. What is the tip, Liz Hake, today that you would wish you could offer Liz Hake walking out of our shared alma mater? That would either make the path easier or you think would have guided the way you could have hoped the path could have gone?
What if it's something that I know I wouldn't have taken at that point?
That's fine.
Okay.
Look, I was a little shipwreck at 22 walking out of college. I still am, but I was more of one then.
It would be keep your eyes on your own damn page. My biggest issue, and it is still an issue, is I compare. I'm not where I should be. I should be further. I haven't achieved enough. I haven't made enough, blah, 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 whatever that is. And it would be put the freaking blinders on and keep your eyes on your own damn page. And I know I wouldn't take it, but I would still tell myself, because it will work out if you do that.
Looking at the world today, do you think you are good or better at it?
Yes.
That tip?
I do. This is like a recent, as I have gone down the, learning about my own tendencies as a people pleaser and really trying to undo some of my good girl, nice girl mentalities, I have learned that my worth, my persona, my status as a good girl has absolutely nothing to do with what everybody thinks or sees about what I'm doing or saying, right? And so I think the more that I've started to say, oh my God, what happens if I say no? Oh, no one gets angry? Oh, great. I'll just keep going. And the longer that I've done that, I'm just going to say no here. I'm going to tell people I can't do that. I'm going to take a different path. The more I've said, oh damn, I should have just been keeping my eyes on my own path this whole time anyway. So it does get more and more comfortable. And I've gotten more comfortable with when I notice that someone is disappointed in me or in my response or whatever, I got to keep telling myself they're responsible for their own emotions. They're responsible for their own disappointment. That's not on me. And this is like a recent, probably in the last year to 2 years, that I've really started to say, you know what, screw that. Because if I wake up at 85 years old and all these ideas that I have in my head die with me, I'm going to be so upset. So now is the time for pushing them out.
Ah, what a great way to end this conversation on daily tips that may or may not help you. Liz Hake, thank you. What a joy of a conversation. Could you please tell the Tippendales where they might be able to learn more about you, follow you if they have interest, reach out if they happen to need?
Yes, absolutely. You can find me on all social platforms, YouTube as well, YouTube, TikTok, Instagram at Liz Hake or Liz-Hake. You can find me at my website, lizhake.com. You can also listen to my podcast at Kind of a Bitch on all social media / podcasting platforms. Mind bracket of a bitch. The whole idea behind it was I want to be, in terms of negotiating, how do I get shit done? Well, I'm really kind, but I'm not afraid of being a bitch. And bitch is subjective. You know what I mean? So we're talking about communication styles. We're talking about people pleasing. We're talking about achieving big things while still being unapologetically bold, but fiercely kind. The whole idea behind it is being unapologetically bold, but fiercely kind.
Thank you so much for joining us. I hope you have a wonderful rest of your day.
Thanks.
And Tippendales, we will see you next week for more tips. And you will see Liz Hake every Wednesday in April here on Daily Tips that may or may not help you.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
Most meal delivery services promise healthy food, but look closer, and you'll often find cheap industrial seed oils hiding in the ingredients. Forkful does things differently. Forkful delivers chef-prepared meals made with premium ingredients you'd expect at a great restaurant, from center-cut filet mignon to wild-caught lobster mac and cheese, and every meal is 100% seed oil-free. Instead of canola or soybean oil, Forkful chefs cook with extra virgin olive oil, avocado oil, and grass-fed butter, because better fats make better food. Meals arrive fresh, never frozen, with clear nutrition and ingredient transparency, so you always know exactly what you're eating. Restaurant-quality meals, real ingredients, no seed oils. Discover Forkful today at ForkfulMeals.com.